All right, so Matt, I didn't tell you this, but I just had some Japanese cartoons tattooed on my legs.
Okay.
Yeah, my doctor told me that I needed manganese. I don't know if it matters, but her name is Dr. Anime, but I don't know if that...
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I am doing all right.
Good.
How are you?
I'm surviving, man. It has been a week, let me tell you that.
I think things are tough all over, man.
I think so. I had to get, I didn't tell you this, but I had to get a tire changed because I got a nail in it. And last time I went up there, it was Ashley's. This time it was mine, and it couldn't hit in my thick all terrain tread part. It had to hit in between them and put a hole in it. And we pay for like the tire coverage. So they take care of it. So I always take it back to them to do it. But I have to say this to the city of Grand Prairie, get your crap together. It's like somebody threw handfuls of nails all over the place. And it's because there's so much construction. They're putting a Bass Pro Shop in about, on 190 up here from the house. And so you drive past that and I'm just like, my butthole is gripping the seats, just knowing I'm going to run over something. Because anytime I see construction anywhere, I'm worried about getting stuff in my tires. And seems like the whole of Grand Prairie is covered in construction. So I would like to say now to the Grand Prairie City Council, get your crap together. You've got one angry Graveyard Tales guy here because I had to drive through this. And I'm going to start riding.
Amanda had a screw in one of hers.
Oh, no.
I had to fix that. So
I hate that, man. Anyway, off truck troubles here. Go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting if you're into that sort of thing. We also want to thank tonight's sponsor, Care Of, and we'll talk more about them coming up in the episode. While you're on the internet doing your thing, either sending the Grand Prairie City Council an angry email about the nails all over the roads of Grand Prairie or whatever, you know, something constructive, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. We have three different levels, and our $10 a month levels, not only do they get the bonus episodes every week, but they also get an audio and video ad free version of the main show. And we started doing a bonus show just for our $10 tier. And it's not like any other thing that Matt and I have done. It's kind of a free spirit show. We talk a lot of crap on there. We do random things. We have guests. I think we're up. We're in the double digits now of episodes on that show. It's fun. We drop one every week. And so if you want to hear Matt and I in a different context, then you can go over there and sign up to become a $10 patron. But our $1 and $5, they get a bonus episode a week. And our $5 also gets the ad-free versions of the show as well. So there's something over there for however much you want to spend. But you can go get you some extra Graveyard Tales. And, you know, it costs less than if you were to go get coffee a couple times a week. That would cost you more than a $10 tier over there on Patreon.
Yeah. And don't forget to check out our website too. It's graveyardpodcast.com.
Right.
We've got all kinds of Graveyard Tales merchandise. You know, if you need that new tank top with the skull mic on it, or if you're looking for like a mug to drink out of when you're hanging out by the pool. You can get a cool gravy. You can sport your favorite podcast right there by the pool. And
yep.
Then you can get some Graveyard Tale stuff.
Right. Right. You can get a big Skull Mike logo and slap it on your tumbler for when you go to the gym and put it on your water bottle, or when you go hiking, get you some Graveyard Tale stickers or something. Look, over there.
It's a cool logo. I mean, I wish we could take credit for it. We had it made for us, but they did an awesome job.
Yep. They really did. So Matt, that's all we got for housekeeping. Why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
So tonight we're going to head to Scotland and talk about this rare but very strange phenomena that occurs on top of the second highest peak in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about the Fear Lyth, or also Amphir Lythmore, but easier said, the Big Gray Man.
Yeah, and that's the way I'm going to be saying it this whole episode. To cut in, Matt, I have heard, I had to go pronounce a lot of things, go to how to pronounce on a lot of things, because when you sent me this topic to do, I went, oh, crap. Because my tongue does not work well with words from this region of the world.
Oh, no.
And so I went to look up the name of this entity, and it doesn't help that there were five different ways to say it.
Right.
So it the way you said it, the Amphir Lyth, the Amphir Lyth, like I heard it. So I don't know. If you're from Scotland, tell us how y'all actually say it.
So what I did was I went and found a YouTube video that was done by a guy from Scotland.
Oh, okay. That helps.
So I figured this has got to be as close as I can get to how it should be pronounced.
Yeah, but you could have run into what we run into in America a lot. It's a common pronunciation of something, and then you hear somebody pronounce it totally wrong.
Right.
And you're like, how has nobody corrected you? So you could have found that one guy. Just saying.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
But as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information. And as always, there's going to be more that Matt and I are unable to cover, either for time or pronunciation reasons on this. But, you know, maybe we left out a whole thing because we couldn't pronounce a single word of it. Who knows? But go down there in the bottom of the show notes and check our sources out. And also because Matt and I are not able to get over to the second highest peak in the UK to research this for ourselves.
Yeah,
so no. we have to not, give the credit to
not
those
today.
People. Yeah, right. have to give the credit to those people who actually have done that. Now, as Matt said, the Amphir Lyth, the Amphir Lyth, whatever, the Big Gray Man, or the Gray Man. He's also known as the Gray Man of Ben McDo. And it's known to stalk the people who climb the mountain of Ben McDo, which is, like Matt said, the second highest peak in Scotland, because the high levels of fog up there, not many people have actually seen this entity, but we'll get into what they have experienced.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of fog on this peak. So he stalks you kind of in the fog while you're hiking this mountain. Now, stories about the Gray Man, they've been recorded as early as 1791, but the most famous account was given in 1925 by a highly respected scientist and mountaineer who was on Ben McDo in 1891. So some believe the Gray Man to be like the guardian of the mountain, but some kind of think of him as a guardian to a gate to other dimensions. So they believe there's a gate to another dimension on Ben McDo, and that he guards this gate to make sure you don't stumble upon it or use it.
Yeah. Which is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely no evidence at all that this such a gate exists. Right. But I like the thought. And honestly, if there was going to be one stuck up on top of Ben McDew in that fog would be the ideal place.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, if you were looking at this mountain and looking at the fog and cloud cover near the summit,
mm-hmm.
then you would say, if I go up in that, I'm liable to cross over into another dimension.
Right. Right.
See, it definitely looks like that.
Right. And it kind of reminds me of a topic that I want us to cover, but Shambhala, it's supposed uh-huh. to be up, you know, in the mountains, and it's another dimension, but that's kind of what the thought of a dimensional gate up on Ben McDew reminds me of. You know, and it would fit stories that we hear about people having to climb these peaks to get to some other dimension or some other realm to meet these creatures. And, you know, so it's a really cool thing to think about. And if you believe in dimensional gates, possible, but like Matt said, despite people thinking that, there's no evidence that that's actually what's up there. Now, most of the time, the gray man stays hidden in the fog, like I said, and the peaks that it lives on and hunts on are usually very foggy. So most of the people haven't seen him. They just experience this feeling of being watched or stalked, and they hear the gravel behind them crunching, kind of like if something or someone was walking behind them and following them fairly closely. So, you know, when you're walking along a gravel path, you can hear the footsteps. And you also know these are my footsteps. These are somebody else's footsteps. And that's kind of what they get, is they hear that, but then they also get that feeling of being stalked. And we talked about that not too long ago. You know what that feels like. If somebody's watching you and you should be alone, but you get that feeling, you know what that feels like. It's that creepy up the back tingling kind of sensation.
Yeah, it's weird, but it is, you definitely can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you can sense somebody else being near you. I don't know what causes that.
It's got to be some type of telepathic sense that we have, because, you know, you can be in a restaurant and you get that feeling like somebody's looking at you, and you look up and somebody from across the restaurant is staring holes in you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there has to be some kind of evolutionary advantage that we picked up along the way that our ancestors had to know when something was looking at them. And yeah,
maybe
I think
it's like
there's
a shift in the energy or something.
Yeah.
We have some innate sense that
yep.
triggers that sensation.
It would help our ancestors. If you're walking through the jungles and a big cat is stalking you, it would help to be able to feel that they're staring at you so you can hide from a predator. But maybe we still have some of that today. Mm. But those who have witnessed him say that, you know, the ones that have actually seen him say that he's a very tall humanoid, at least 8 feet high, but sometimes people say he's as tall as 30 feet. And he's covered in short gray hair, hence the name the Big Gray Man. And he's said to have very long arms and legs and have kind of an ape-like head. So there's been a few people that have actually witnessed that, you know, enough to be able to get the description out. But most people just end up seeing these weird footprints covering the path of their own prints, as if something walked over the path after them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're tracking anything, you know when something went by first and something after it, because there's a print on top of a print, and you can tell that. And you would know, I just walked past here, I know I didn't step on another print. So this print had to have happened after me. So they get these large footprints stepping basically across their path. And that's what they relay most of the time. And because of this, a lot of people believe that the gray man is a relative to Sasquatch or Bigfoot. That it's some kind of like Yeti and Sasquatch and Bigfoot are all cousins. They think the gray man of Ben McDoo is a specific type of Bigfoot that kind of evolved on that mountain, the gray to blend in with the fog and the rock and stuff, rather than white of the Yeti or brown of the Sasquatch.
And you know, there's a lot of talk that Bigfoot would be an interdimensional creature.
True.
So it goes back to that idea that there may be a portal on top of the mountain somewhere.
True. You know, he's said to walk on two legs, and he walks and runs like a normal person, just a lot larger, which also sounds like Bigfoot. Now, more frequently, the gray man is encountered in physical sensation, but without a true physical form. Sensation of this type includes vast dark blurs, which obscure the sky, strange crunching noises, like we mentioned, echoing footsteps, which will pursue the person who's hearing it, an icy feeling in the surrounding atmosphere, as well as a physical feeling of a cold grip or, you know, like a brush against the observer's flesh. There's also supposedly this high-pitched humming sound, or, you know, people have called it a singing, that is associated with Ben McDoo and the Gray Man. So apparently when they're up on Ben McDoo, they hear this high pitch, and it's almost like a singing in tone. And they associate that with this Gray Man. And that's also interesting to me because people have said they hear whistling with Bigfoot sightings.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, you see where I'm landing on a lot of this evidence, but
that's right. Yeah.
A lot of the reports tend to fall in that category where they resemble Bigfoot encounters from the U.S. Now, also, the gray man has an extremely powerful physical effect on people. Visitors to Ben McDoo report a feeling of overwhelming negative energy. Occasionally, this is described as extreme lethargy and despondency. And a lot of times, it's called, like, people will say that they have this acute fear, like an apprehension or overwhelming panic, and that ends up leading to suicidal thoughts or physical flight from the area. So whatever they're feeling from the gray man is causing fight or flight to kick in, and they're getting this acute fear and like this feeling of panic and having to get off. And this is coming from people who are, you know, experienced mountaineers. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be the mountain or the conditions causing this. And they were fine just shortly before, quote, the gray man appeared. And then they're getting these sensations. So they're attributing it to the presence of the gray man.
Right.
Now, generally, this fear, they say, is accompanied by the physical sound of echoing footsteps chasing the person, and sometimes the sound of a resonant yet completely incomprehensible voice, which seems to be faintly Gaelic in nature. So they get this kind of sound of a Gaelic speech coming at them.
I'm just getting this idea of this thing sounding like Groundskeeper Willie.
There, right, you know, right.
I can't do it. I wish I could.
No,
every time I try to do an impersonation of a Scottish accent, it sounds terrible. So I don't even try it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you remember and I'm not going to say his full name, but the fat guy from the Austin Powers movies.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I pictured. Even though I'm a huge Simpsons fan, I just was picturing that with being the big gray man, him being as big as he is. I was get in my belly kind of thing coming across the mountaintops, you know, you'd like, did he just say what I thought he said?
That Scottish accent he uses so often.
Yeah.
You know, Shrek, the Austin Powers, So I Married an Axe Murderer. It is so funny to me.
That's one of his favorite accents to do, apparently. Now, let's talk about the peak that the Gray Man is associated with, Ben McDoo. Now, it means Hill of McDuff or McDuff's Mountain. So Ben McDoo is the second highest mountain in Britain after Ben Nevis and the highest of the Cairngorm Mountains. Now, the summit is about 1,309 meters or 4,295 feet above sea level. So it's pretty tall. Yeah. Ben McDoo sits on the southwestern edge of the Cairngorm Plateau, overlooking Larraggru Pass to the west and Loch Etchedecken to the east. And it lies on the boundary between the historic counties of Aberdeenshire and Banffshire. So hopefully I got those right, but I saw those and I was cussing Matt because of having to pronounce these words.
You know, when Amanda was asking me, what are y'all talking about tonight? So I was telling her about it and I was telling her the name of the mountain and she goes, wait, what? And I was like, it's Ben McDoo is the name of the mountain. She's like, are you serious? And I couldn't figure out. I was like, is it that odd? You know, and she was just like, that doesn't sound like the name of a mountain. That sounds like the name of a person.
Yeah.
So, yep. Well, yeah. In English, it sounds like the name of a person. I was like, but you know, in Scotland, it means something else.
Right. 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 The Ben part is like mountain. And then the McDoo is how they say McDuff.
So. She's like thinking this is like Mr. Magoo's son or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben McDoo.
Yeah. I went to high school with a Ben McDoo. He was actually the second highest person in high school. So it was really weird.
Who was the first?
I'm not saying. It hits a little too close to home, Matt. Now, we need to look at the Cairngorms as well, since Ben McDoo sits amongst the Cairngorms here. Now, they consist of three large plateaus that have these low, rounded glacial mountains in and around them, and they're divided by two passes through the mountains. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce these.
I was waiting.
Nope. And not even going to try to pronounce these, but there's two passes that go through the mountain and these passes, they're not real deep. So some people think they make it look like it's only one plateau. If you see it from a certain angle, you know, you don't see those passes and you think, oh, that's just one big plateau. But this range is a glacial range and the passes were cut by the movement of the glaciers. Now, when you consider the height of the Cairngorms, their remoteness and the severity of the weather and how quickly it changes, they're considered to be the most arduous range in the UK. So they're not for the average climber. You know, this is not something that you and I, Matt, could go climb safely. This is for somebody who is used to mountaineering and can get away with it. You and I would die.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm not climbing mountains.
No, no. Now, the plateau is said to have a tundra climate. And the look of the terrain is more like the area of the high Arctic in Canada or northern Norway instead of what you normally see in the European Alps. So it's an oddity for that area. And the weather often deteriorates rapidly with altitude. So when there are moderate conditions, 490 feet below the plateau, the top can be stormy or misty, and you can even have like icy or powdery snow up there. So you can start out thinking you're fine and get up, 490 feet, 500 feet or so, and the conditions totally change on you.
Mm-hmm.
And even when no snow is falling, the wind can whip up the snow that's lying around there to produce whiteout conditions for several meters, it says, above the surface. And snow drifts can build up rapidly in sheltered places. And I thought this was interesting, Matt. The wind can be so strong on Ben McDo that it can pick up gravel and fling gravel through the air. So you actually walking can be impossible.
Dang, that's like buckshot flying at you.
Yeah. Yep. It just reminds me, we were driving here a couple days ago, and I had just stopped at a gas station to wipe my window from all the bugs. And I'm driving down 360, and all of a sudden, there's this, like, I don't know what bugs it was, but it was this big, like, swarm of bugs that came by, and it went all over the front of my truck and the windshield. And I'm like, oh, my God, I just cleaned it. And it, like, left, I don't know what it, but it sounded like gravel hitting the truck, driving through gravel, and it's just these big bugs. And so this gravel getting whipped around is kind of like that. You can't even walk. You'd have to hunker down, take shelter somewhere, because if you got wind strong enough to blow gravel at you like that, I don't think you're going to be able to walk through it anyway.
No, hell no.
Now, the lowest recorded temperature in the UK, it was actually recorded in the Cairngorms. And it dropped to negative 17 degrees Fahrenheit or negative 27.2 Celsius. So that's cold for the UK.
Really cold.
Now, the weather can be very hazardous at times, and it's got unpredictable, dangerous conditions. Now, there's a thing that's described as Britain's worst mountaineering tragedy. It's called the Cairngorm Plateau Disaster. So with these bad conditions, ended up leaving 5 children and 1 adult dead in November of 1971.
Man.
Now, I'm just going to say it. I don't know why you took 5 children on the Cairngorm Plateau,
right,
knowing about the conditions of this place, why you would take those children up there. But in 1971, it happened. So 6 people died in that incident.
So, I mean, it can change very quickly. I can only imagine that it probably seemed like a regular day without any significant problems. And then bam, next thing you know, you're caught up near, you're high up on a mountain and you're caught in a blinding snowstorm surrounded by fog. You can't really tell which way you're going. I can't imagine.
Right. Now, the Cairngorm Plateau actually gets about 130 inches or 320 centimeters of snow annually, which is according to snowforecast.com. So that is a ton of snow annually. So it is not a, like I said, it's not a mountain. Ben McDo and the Cairngorm Plateau in general is not a mountain or mountain range that the average person should be hiking on. So the people that have witnessed the Gray Man are experienced mountaineers.
Right.
They know what conditions to expect. They know what would be up there, and they have dealt with stuff on peaks like this before.
Yeah.
So keep all that in mind as we discuss the Gray Man further. All right, Matt, so let's take a second and talk about tonight's sponsor, Care Of. Now, Care Of is a health and wellness company that ships high-quality, personalized vitamins and supplements and powders conveniently to your door every month. Now, simple acts lead to the biggest differences in your health. Routines really don't have to be complicated to be effective. And, you know, this year, Care Of is making it easier than ever to stick to a consistent routine so you can actually see results. Care Of offers a curated set of products that are designed to work with research-backed ingredients and optimal doses.
Yeah, and you know me, Adam. I'm big. I'm always sending you, hey, have you heard about taking this or that? And you never really know, but with Care Of's quiz, you can go in there and it asks specific questions about what your personal goals are. You know, why would you look to take a supplement?
Right.
And it takes all that information and it boils it down to their recommendations, which really takes the guesswork out of what you should be taking. Is this going to help me achieve the goals that I have for myself?
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it incredibly easy. And not having to stand there and look at that enormous aisle of vitamins stuff and wonder, should I take this? Should I not? What is that guy buying? Look, go to Care Of, take the quiz, and find out what's going to help you. So for 50% off of your first Care Of subscription order, just go to takecareof.com and enter our promo code GRAVE50. That's GRAVE50.
That's right. For 50% off your first Care Of subscription order, go to takecareof.com and enter our code GRAVE50, GRAVE50.
Okay, so as Adam mentioned earlier, the actual sightings date all the way back to the 1790s. Okay, so poet James Hogg wrote a poem about confronting a shadowy figure in the Cairngorms while he was tending sheep. And the poem says, quote, "A giant blackamoor, at least 30 feet high and equally proportioned and very near me. I was actually struck powerless with astonishment and terror." And so a lot of people say this is what he is talking about. He is talking about the big gray man.
Yeah.
Now, it was all the way to 1925 when J. Norman Collie gave the first recorded account of a gray man encounter while he was talking at the Cairngorm Club in Aberdeen. Now, Collie was a noted hiker, professor. He was a member of the Royal Geographical Society. And he recounts this terrifying experience he had as he hiked alone near the summit of Ben McDo years earlier in 1891. So he didn't even share this story for over 30 years. He held on to it.
Well,
exactly. I mean, you know, we're going to talk a bit more about Collie and his pedigree, and then you kind of understand why he didn't say anything.
Yeah.
But this is what he said. "I was returning from the cairn on the summit in a mist when I began to think I heard something else than merely the noise of my own footsteps. Every few steps I took, I heard a crunch, and then another crunch, as if someone was walking after me, but taking steps three or four times the length of my own. I said to myself, this is all nonsense. I listened and heard it again, but I could see nothing in the mist. As I walked on, and the eerie crunch, crunch sounded behind me, I was seized with terror, and it took me to my heels, staggering blindly among the boulders for 4 or 5 miles, nearly down to Ruthemurcus Forest. Whatever you make of it, I don't know. But there is something very queer about the top of Ben McDo, and I will not go back there again. Now, Collie's account was reported in the local press, which started a debate between skeptics and believers within the mountaineering community.
Yeah.
But then other climbers started to come forward with their own experiences, which prior to this, they had been afraid to share.
Sure, yeah.
Now, one climber, Hugh D. Welsh, said that he hiked the summit with his brother in 1904, where throughout the day and night, they heard slurring footsteps as if someone was walking through the water-saturated gravel. Both felt, quote, frequently conscious of something near us, an eerie sense of apprehension. So, yeah. There's that feeling again. But the feeling, I guess if you're up there on the mountain and you're surrounded by this fog and the harsh conditions that are near the summit, you can begin to kind of fool yourself into believing that something's happening that's not. I mean, the visibility's poor. You know, lighting is going to be different. You know, you can spook yourself for sure. But both Collie and Wells say that they heard footsteps. And right. They're up there by themselves. Well, I mean, you know, Welsh had his brother with him, but they were both hearing this. So they knew it wasn't the other one. Now, J. Norman Collie, who we were talking about, he is renowned for his work with mountain guide John McKenzie, and they explored and mapped Skye's Black Cullen Mountains, and there is a statue that commemorates their contribution to mountaineering in Glen Sligachan. I don't know how you
that's
say
what
that.
That's what I heard, too, when you said it.
I did not plan that. When I said it, I heard it. Now, Alistair Borthwick's superb 1939 book about climbing in Scotland, called Always a Little Further, relates the accounts of two climbers that he knew had experienced what by then was known as the Amphir Leith Moor, or the Big Gray Man. Because of its appearance, when it was briefly glimpsed by a few of those who encountered it. Now, remember, this is a rare occurrence, okay? Yeah. And I looked up, only about 15,000 people have summited Ben McDo, just a little over 15,000.
Yeah.
So we're just talking about a very small percentage of people who have had an experience at all, much less actually witnessed something.
Right, right.
So Borthwick writes this book in 1939, and he describes two different accounts that were relayed to him about their experience. The first one was alone, heading over McDewey for Corr on a night when the snow had a hard, crisp crust through which his boots broke at every step. He reached the summit, and it was while he was descending the slopes, which fall forward toward the Lairig, that he heard footsteps behind him, not in rhythm with his own, but occurring only once for every three steps he took. Okay? So that was similar to what Collie's experience was. So,
and
go ahead.
That shows that it's not an echo.
Right.
Like some people would say, oh, well, you're hearing the echo of your footsteps. Not if it's... like you were saying, the other guy said it sounded like three times bigger than mine. And this guy said one for every two to three steps he took. So if it was an echo, it'd be crunch, 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 crunch. It wouldn't be crunch, 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 crunch.
Yeah. So imagine hearing footsteps that are out of sequence with your own.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're not coming as quickly as yours, you can begin to estimate how much taller this thing is than you, how much bigger of a stride it's got.
Right.
So that's where the idea, especially with Collie, was like, this: whatever's behind me is a lot bigger than me.
Right, right.
Now, this next one says, I felt a queer, crinkly feeling in the back of my neck. But I said to myself, this is silly. There must be a reason for it. So I stopped, and the footsteps stopped. And I sat down and tried to reason it out. I could see nothing. There was a moon about somewhere, but the mist was fairly thick. The only thing I could make of it was that when my boots broke through the snow crust, they made some sort of echo. But then every step should have echoed and not just this regular 1 in 3.
Exactly.
I was scared stiff. I got up. I walked on, trying hard not to look behind me. I got down all right, but the footsteps stopped about 1,000 feet above the Larry. I did not run. But if anything had much as said boo behind me, I'd have been down to quarter like a streak of lightning.
I agree. Well, I probably would have too.
The second man's experience was very similar. He was on McDoo and alone. He heard footsteps. He was climbing in daylight in summer. But the mist was so dense that he was working by compass, and visibility was almost as poor as if it had been night. The footsteps he heard were made by something or someone trudging up the fine screes which decorate the upper part of the mountain. A thing not extraordinary in itself, but the steps were only a few yards behind him. But exceedingly odd when the mist suddenly cleared and he could see no living thing on the mountain. And at that point, it didn't have any mist cover of any kind.
Right.
So he's hearing it. He's obviously experiencing that feeling that something is very close to him. And then when the mist finally clears, there's nothing there. So there's nowhere something could have gone. I mean, they're at the top of a mountain. He would have seen it.
Yeah, it's not like it ducked into a cloud bank or something.
Right. So Borthwick says he asked him, did the steps follow yours exactly? And he said no. He said that was the funny thing. They didn't. They were regular. But the queer thing was that they seemed to come once for every 2.5 steps I took. He thought it was stranger still when Borthwick told him the other man's story. He said, you see, he was long-legged and 6 feet tall, and the first man was only 5'7".
So a slight discrepancy in stride length.
Sure. So, you know, so this one's describing these bigger steps. He's about 5'7", so he's going to have a shorter stride. Then the 6 foot tall man, he's hearing the footsteps, and they're also not in cadence with his own. Mm-hmm. So by that estimate, whatever was making the sound behind them would have had to have been much taller than both men.
Right. But it makes sense that the taller man, he said it was like 2 to 2.5 steps that it would crunch. And the shorter man said every 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that works out in my mind of it being a similar sized creature both times with a different stride length for the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it made that sound, you know, at different points in their stride.
Right. Exactly. Now, this second man went on to say that he was once out with a search party on McDewey, and on the way down after an unsuccessful day, he talked to some of the gamekeepers and the searchers who were there and told them about it and wanted to know what they thought. Now, these people worked on McDew, so they would know. And he was wondering, had they seen the gray man? Did he exist? Was it just kind of a legend? And he said they looked at him for a few seconds, and then one of them said, we don't talk about that.
Mm.
And so these are people that worked on the mountain.
Yeah.
And when he brings it up, they're like, yeah, no, we're not going to discuss that.
Dude, that's so much like other indigenous stories that we've heard. The people that live there, they don't want to talk about it.
Exactly.
They don't want to bring that bad mojo or whatever to them, because they think if they talk about it, he's going to show up.
Exactly. So we don't discuss this.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And it's more than just, oh, we don't want you to make fun of us, or we don't want you to think we're crazy. I mean, these are the people that are there.
Right.
So if they don't want to discuss it, there's a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1945, a man named Pete Densham was participating in rescue work in the Cairngorm Mountains during World War II. One day, he reported hearing strange noises, with mist closing in on his location and increasing pressure around his neck. Now, he fled before seeing anything real. A friend of his, climber Richard Freer, wrote about his sense of, quote, a presence utterly abstract but intensely real up on the mountain, and that he had heard an intensely high singing note
mm-hmm.
a few years later in 1948. Now, while on mountain rescue duty, Densham and Freer found themselves on the summit. Freer started talking to someone, and Densham assumed that this someone was hidden by the mist and everything at the summit. Now, Densham joined in the conversation, and after a while, the two realized that they were the only ones there. Now, what's really weird is that neither one of them could recall the content of the conversation, only that it had happened.
That's weird.
But Densham had no further experiences, but he believed he'd had psychic interactions with something on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the idea that it may be some type of spirit guardian of the mountain, that it's not a corporeal being.
Right.
You know, that it's more of an entity that just inhabits the summit and the area just below.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, the mist and everything just adds to the idea that this is a spiritual being.
Right.
But Freer also presented the encounter of another mutual friend who wished to remain anonymous. But while this guy was camping on Ben McDew, he reported waking up feeling an inescapable feeling of dread, and looked out of his tent to see a large figure with dark hair standing in front of the moon in silhouette.
Nah, no thanks.
Uh-huh. In 1958, naturalist and mountaineer Alexander Tunion, I'm guessing I'm pronouncing that right. That's a weird name.
I'll go with it.
But Tunion published an article in the Scots magazine about an encounter with the gray man in 1943. Notice how long these people go before they actually come out and say they've had an experience.
Yeah. Decades.
Yeah. I mean, this guy is a naturalist and a mountaineer. He's a published author. You know, we've got experienced mountain climbers. We've got people that are well known in the mountain climbing community, you know, pioneers in this mm-hmm. field, essentially. So they've got a reputation.
Right.
You know, if they start spouting off stories of some kind of weird creature that's living on top of this mountain, people are going to begin to question other things they have done. And they can't risk that.
Yeah. They can't have the validity of their scientific findings or whatever questioned because they had a gray man experience.
Yeah. But this is what Tunion wrote. I spent a 10-day leave climbing alone in the Cairngorms. One afternoon, just as I reached the summit cairn of Ben McDew, mist swirled across the Larrick Grew and enveloped the mountain. The atmosphere became dark and oppressive. A fierce, bitter wind whisked among the boulders, and an odd sound echoed through the mist. A loud footstep, it seemed. Then another and another. A strange shape loomed up, receded, and came charging at me. Without hesitation, I whipped out the revolver and fired three times at the figure. When it still came on, I turned and hared down the path, reaching Glendary in a time that I have never bettered. Said, you may ask, was it really the fear Laith Moore? Frankly, I think it was.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting to point out that there's no photographs of the big gray man. Photographer John A. Rennie supposedly found a series of footprints in Spey Valley that measured 19 inches long and 14 inches wide.
Now, wow.
That's really big.
That's big, yeah.
And those were actually published in a book, but he later discovered that they were a natural phenomenon caused by rainfall eroding the snow. So essentially what Rennie, he saw his own footprint that was later eroded by the snow, or I mean, yeah, by the rain, so yeah, that it made it appear bigger, like Adam was describing, you know, as if something had stepped in your own footprint.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the, where both were there.
Yep.
So that's kind of what he's talking about. And that may explain that one, but it might not necessarily explain all of them.
Right. Especially when they are not exactly all on your footsteps.
Right.
Like if they cross over your path, but don't match your footsteps. And if it's not every footprint of yours, like say it's every third, you know, then we know the stride's bigger because it would do it to all of them. Or most of them, it wouldn't do it to just every third one or something.
Right.
But something I want to point out that about that last encounter that the guy, where he fired the revolver at him, the guy was standing there, right, at his tent, in his tent, like the doorway of his tent. And he saw that shadowy figure rush him. Fade out, come back in, but rushing him the whole time. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Just remember that story for here in just a minute, because we're going to talk about something, and I want you to keep that in mind when we're discussing it.
Yeah. Now, the award-winning host of BBC's Uncanny podcast and television show, Danny Robbins, says explanations could include physical and mental effects of being in an extreme environment and contagion, one person's fear spreading to others. So, you know, I get spooked about something and you're with me and you pick up on it. And then all of a sudden you're spooked.
Yeah. That sounds like mass hallucination though.
Yeah. But he's also considering the fact that, okay, you're not in weather that you're typically accustomed to.
True.
You know, you're in an environment that's very harsh. It's putting a strain on you physically and mentally. Mm. And you believe you experienced something. But Robbins also says there's another possibility. And he says ghosts.
Yeah.
Because Scotland's hills are no stranger to tragedies and other unexplained incidences. And Robbins even mentions one of the topics that he's covered on Uncanny, the Lubilit Lodge, which the mountain people around there has said is haunted. Hmm. So there's all these little cottages throughout the Scottish mountains, and a lot of them are considered to be haunted by these spirits in the mountains.
Yeah.
And yep. I kind of started to dig into these a little bit, and there's some pretty intense stories of people getting really scared and having some wild experiences in these cottages. So Robbins is just equating, look, if some of these other mountains have ghosts on them, what is the possibility that this is a spirit?
Right.
You know, that somehow trapped on the top of this mountain. And he kind of connects it with all these unexplained tragedies that have occurred on the mountains. You know, it's hard to say, but it's worth thinking about, because you've got other mountains in Scotland that have these weird occurrences. Why not Ben McDo?
Right. Right. So we need to look at a couple theories on what the Gray Man could be. Now, some believe that the creature is a manifestation of the very spirit of the mountain. So, like, the mountain itself is creating, like, a guardian spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thought. Others believe that it's what they call a corporeal piece of evidence for the presence of ley lines underneath the mountain.
Yep.
So we've discussed ley lines having energy and power, and some people think that because the ley lines intersect there, that it's producing this basically energetic being type thing that is stalking the mountain. Now, if that were the case,
the energy strong enough that something could survive up there like that, off of that energy.
Yeah. And if that's the case, that's really the first time we've heard that. We know ley lines have power, but we haven't heard of there being a creature of this nature associated with ley lines.
Right.
So I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's the first time we've heard it, and it would be maybe even more interesting if that's what it was.
Right.
Now, the other thing that a lot of skeptics believe is that it is a Brocken specter.
Which sounds terrifying.
Right. But it's also not a Brock inspector, like someone who inspects Brocks.
Be a candy inspector.
Yeah, it's a Brocken specter.
That's what I do now, when I see one of those hearts full of those Brock's candies. I always take my finger and I go,
yeah, you got to inspect them.
This one's toothpaste. You know.
Yeah, right.
All right, this one's caramel. It's okay.
Yep. And I usually inspect the Brock's hard candies myself, but it takes me about 10 minutes to 15 minutes each to inspect one fully.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Now, that's not what we're talking about.
No. You ask, you know, what is a Brock inspector? Well, a Brock inspector is a meteorological phenomena which only occurs when there's an inversion or gaps in the clouds that allows you, the viewer, to see your own shadow cast upon the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? Well, if you were mountain climbing at a time of day when the sun was low and kind of behind you, and if you climbed high enough that you were able to look down on the mist below you, you could witness a shadowy figure of the Brock inspector. It's your own shadow that you see cast on the surface of the mist below, and it would have this like halo ring of light around it. Kind of looks like a rainbow. And, you know, the conditions have to be just right. The sun has to be behind you because you're seeing your shadow projected in front of you through the mist. Apparently, it sometimes appears to be huge. And it's taken from the name Brocken, a peak in the Harz Mountains in Germany. And this region has frequent fogs like Ben McDo does. And there's a few guys who, a theologian and a natural scientist that observed this the first time, and they described it, and they observed it in 1780 is when they described it.
Yeah.
So basically what you're seeing is your own shadow.
Yeah.
Is what people are saying.
It's odd that this phenomena was documented in 1780, 10 years before James Hogg experience.
Right.
Which, honestly, this seems legit. But here's the thing. Brock inspectors they're silent. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's a shadow. It doesn't make any noise.
Right.
So that doesn't explain the sounds that Collie and all these others have heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the most common things that they describe is hearing the footsteps.
Yeah. Yeah.
So does that mean that all these people experienced a Brock inspector that saw something and the footsteps were just a hallucination?
Right. Right. And your shadow is going to follow your movement.
Right.
So you would figure out pretty quickly, oh, I wave at it, it waves back instantly. You know, I stand on my left leg, it stands on its right leg.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be able to work out pretty quickly that's you and that's your shadow. It's not like that's the first time these people have ever seen their own shadow.
Yeah.
Despite it being huge and up in the clouds, it's still your shadow. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to work that out pretty easily and pretty quickly. It's not going. And look, you have to be at a certain altitude with certain conditions.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to stand in the doorway of your tent and your Brock inspector bum rush you.
That's right.
Across the mountain. That's why I wanted you to keep that in mind, is this supposed Brock inspector is moving outside of the way that a shadow would.
Yeah.
It's moving like a shadow in a horror movie.
Yeah.
It's moving of its own accord. So could this be some of them? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Some people could have caught their Brock inspector out of the corner of their eye and thought they saw something.
Yeah.
But like Matt said, they don't make noises.
Yeah.
Shadows don't make noises. It's not going to bum rush you out of nowhere.
Right. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't come clean and say that James Hogg, the poet, in the 1790s did go back the second day and saw the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually believed that he was seeing his own shadow. So
yeah.
He felt like at that time that that's what he was experiencing because it matched his movements.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it still doesn't explain these other experiences. Like who did Densham and Frere, who were they talking to?
Right. Right.
Who was making the high pitched singing noise? Maybe mm-hmm. it was the wind.
You know, yeah.
Coming over
and,
the
and
boulders.
I mean, too.
It's not a smooth surface up there by yep. no means.
That singing or the Gaelic speaking could possibly be the sound of the wind coming through the passes or across the mountaintops or whatever.
Yeah.
I can see that as an explanation for the speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've all heard wind sound weird when it comes across certain things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So,
especially if you're out in the woods or on a hill or something, it makes a different noise than you're used to.
Yeah.
But it, you know, the wind does pick up pebbles and sling them across. So it's got some strength to it.
Right. Yeah. So definitely strong enough to produce a sound.
Right.
That could be mistaken for something else.
But it doesn't explain the footprints either.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of other people, though, they think that it's a creature that does exist.
Yeah, that it's like a physical
creature. Like Bigfoot, Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, some cousin to one of them. And that's possible. I mean, you know, the Altamahaha and stuff in other mountains are large Bigfoot type Yeti type creatures
mm-hmm.
that people have seen for years, and they have the same, we don't talk about them. You know, we let them be, they do their thing. We do our thing. They've been around longer than we have.
Yeah. Now there is a mountain climber named Chris Townsend who has climbed Ben McDo hundreds of times, and he's done it.
Is that Pete Townsend's brother?
Yeah. Yeah. Pete Townsend's brother. Yeah.
Okay.
He can see and Pete can't hear.
So oh, yeah, okay. Makes sense.
But he's an outdoor rider, photographer. He's a long distance walker. Now, he says that the sounds and occasional sightings have to do with the disorientation in the mist or the darkness, making the volume and the sounds, volume of the sounds higher, making the size of the objects that are seen appear much bigger. But he also has another theory, and Townsend was the only one I read that had this idea. He says that Norman Collie had a reputation as being a practical joker. Mm. And that the idea for the big gray man appears in a few places. And he says his status as a top mountaineer and scientist certainly raised the profile of the big gray man and led yep. others to say they had heard or felt something. So I don't know. I cannot imagine somebody with the clout that Norman Collie had pulling a practical joke. Now, in all honesty, this was the end of his career. I mean, you know, yeah. 1925, yeah. he's speaking, you know, at this group. You know, this had happened 30 years prior. You know, it's possible.
Maybe.
And all the other sightings started coming out after his story was published. Mm-hmm. But I've got to think that at some point before he died, he would go, I was just kidding.
Yep. He wouldn't perpetuate it to his death, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, especially when all these other climbers had come forward and said they had had weird experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would have to believe this is going to get out of control.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
this is going to be a legend that endures. Maybe that's what he wanted if that was the case. I can't imagine somebody like him wanting that. Because you know he's got to believe if after that was published that his name is going to be attached to this forever.
Right, right.
So if it didn't really happen, would he want his name associated with it? I don't know.
To possibly come out many years later
yeah.
that he was lying or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Because again, that would discredit a lot of other things he'd said.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So yep. I, if this was just somebody, you know, just, hey, this guy got up at this meeting and said he saw this. I'd believe that,
mm-hmm.
but there's something about that somebody that is like one of the figures in mountaineering at the turn of the century is not going to stand up and just be like, hey, get a load of this, you know?
Right, right, right.
I mean, I definitely think it's possible, but I just don't want to believe that somebody with that kind of, with that kind of notoriety would do something like that and then just leave yeah. it, you
yeah.
know?
I'm with you. It's possible, but I don't know. I don't.
So what do you,
I don't know.
What do you guys think? You think there is the Scotland have its own version of Bigfoot that lives on the top of Ben McDoo? Is there some type of spiritual guardian that looks after the summit of that mountain? Let us know what you think. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. You know, you get in there and share your personal experiences, share your opinions. We all just want to hear those great stories. And if you've got another idea about what the big gray man is, let us know. Don't forget to check out our website. I mentioned it at the top of the show. You can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show. And you can become a patron. And if you're thinking about it, jump in there at that $10 level and get access to our new show, Side Quest. We think you're going to really enjoy it. Don't forget and rate and review us on iTunes. It brings us up the charts. It just helps more people find the show. Until next time, we'll save you a seat in the great.
See you soon.